Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. Last month, we focused on hypertension, the medical term for high blood pressure, a condition where the force of blood against your artery walls is consistently too high. It's a major risk factor for serious health problems like heart disease, stroke, kidney failure, and other complications. We review how to keep it at bay, as well as treating and managing it after diagnosis. This month, we discuss how individuals can prevent or manage risk factors for heart failure and discuss the latest advancements in heart failure treatment at any stage. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay, and this month I'm talking with cardiologist Dr. Jueris Rojas Marte. He's the medical director of Deborah's Advanced Heart Failure and Pulmonary Hypertension Programs. And we return to the topic of heart failure, which he believes is a misnomer.
Most patients who have heart failure, their heart is actually not failing. We could rather call it the cardiac dysfunction, which is what most people have. But sticking to the official term, heart failure is the inability of the heart to pump blood forward, or doing so at the cost of high blood pressures within the cardiac chambers. And those compensatory mechanisms is what leads to the symptoms that patients have.
What are the most common causes?
It's the end result of multiple, almost all cardiac diseases and many non-cardiac conditions as well. But the most common cause is coronary artery disease, or plaques building up in the arteries of the heart that leads to heart attacks, also less acute forms of cardiac dysfunction. Other causes of heart failure are hypertension, systemic hypertension, and other conditions like diabetes, the metabolic syndrome can cause heart failure as well. Vital infections, for example, which is the involvement of the cardiac muscle by most of the times by a virus, like the Coxsackie, the COVID, for example, is now a well-known cause of cardiomyopathy, and that leads to the development of heart failure. Other causes could be exposure to drugs like chemotherapy. The alcohol can lead to heart failure as well. The peripartum cardiomyopathy is a big one in women around the time of delivery. And there's other less common forms, genetic forms, infiltrative cardiomyopathies like amyloidosis, which is a condition that is getting some traction these days, given that there are more therapies available. Then there's a whole lot of other conditions out there that can lead to the development of heart failure. As I said, it's the end result of many problems.
You're not going to present with a patient who has heart failure and nothing else medically going on.
It could happen. Patients who have, let's say, genetic forms of heart failure. And the first presentation is just heart failure. But that is not the most common case scenario. The most common thing to happen is that patients had high blood pressure for a long time or high cholesterol and then developed a heart attack. A heart attack can develop, can cause heart failure immediately if it's a massive type of heart attack, or it can lead to damage of the cardiac muscle and then later in life develop heart failure. It's very common for patients who have long-standing high blood pressure to develop heart failure later in life when they are in their 70s, 80s. In most of the cases, there is a history of prior medical conditions, most of the times cardiac-related, that leads to the development of heart failure in the future.
Genetic predisposition for heart failure. Or are we talking genetic predisposition for another cardiac issue that tends to lead to heart failure? What's the DNA destiny question?
Both situations could happen. Patients could have genetic mutation that predispose them to develop cardiomyopathy, and that leads to development of heart failure, sometimes very aggressive. And patients need to have those interventions that we've been talking about early in life. In fact, I had a patient a few years ago that I sent for heart transplant. He was only 32, 33 years old. And his daughter, actually, she hadn't had a heart transplant like a year before him. This was one type of genetic cardiomyopathy that led to the development of end-stage heart failure and required in both my patient and his daughter a heart transplant. There are other patients, for example, that are born with a certain defect in the heart, congenital heart diseases, and get these conditions repaired very early in life. And later on, when they are in their 20s, their 30s, 40s, then they start having heart failure because whatever repair were done as a child now start to fail, and the compensatory mechanisms that the heart or the person has also start to fail, and these patients develop heart failure because of that. In the United States, there's over 1 million people living with congenital problems or that were born with congenital disease and now have heart failure as adults.
So I'm going to ask you how people can prevent or manage all of these risks. The easy answer is live right and stay lucky. But what specifically should we be doing?
As I mentioned, that the conditions that lead to heart failure are high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol. Basically, in the general population who don't have those conditions, have a healthy lifestyle, avoid excessive salt consumption, exercise, keep a normal weight to avoid the obesity, the high cholesterol, diabetes, etc., metabolic syndrome. People who have those conditions, take your medications, go to the doctor, follow healthy lifestyle as well. If someone is overweight or obese, lose weight, because taking care of those conditions will decrease the chances of developing heart failure later in life. And it's not something that happens within a year or two. It might happen in 10, 15, 20 years, depending on where the patient is. So sometimes it's something that feels that it's not accomplishing anything. But if people do that, take care of the diabetes, of the high blood pressure, it'll be very unlikely that they develop heart failure in the future.
Environmental exposures, getting back to kind of the lucky part of preventing heart failure, there have been some studies recently about pollution impacting heart failure, raising your risk for it, wildfire smoke exposures, raising your risk for heart failure. How might that work?
There are many agents, exposures that people can have that could have a risk of causing heart failure in the future. But we need more research in those areas. For example, in the case of exposure to wildfires, that can lead to development of lung problems. Lung problems can cause pulmonary hypertension, for example, and pulmonary hypertension can cause right-sided heart failure. Later in life, the effects on the left side of the heart and development of heart failure directly, it's well known, but I don't discard any possibility that it can also affect the cardiac muscle. We just need more research.
Now, in terms of managing your heart failure, when you're diagnosed, a heat dome, as we are apparently experiencing every year now, to some degree or another in Philadelphia in the summer months, what does managing your own inner thermostat do when you've got heart failure issues? When you have intense heat, is it more dangerous for a heart failure patient?
Well, many heart failure patients use diuretics, which are medications that make them urinate and get rid of fluid. If someone is exposed to intense heat and not drinking enough, and they're sweating from that, it could be possible that they get dehydrated from the effect of both the heat and the diuretic. And that could be detrimental. That could lead to hypotension. It could affect the kidneys. Also, having heart failure means that their heart doesn't have the same level of resistance to withstand the stress factors like extreme heat. So the patients might be less tolerant to that, might feel more short of breath, tired, weak. So it's important for patients with this condition to take care of themselves and maybe not be outside as much and drink. Hydrate.
Early warning signs and symptoms of heart failure, you said it could take decades.
There are screening tools that we can use and get an idea if the heart is developing the changes that would later manifest as heart failure.
So would you do that in somebody who isn't having symptoms and is just has a condition that puts them on track for it?
It's an excellent question. We don't do that right now, but that might be something we could do in the future. Actually, I'm interested in that very same idea from a research standpoint. To give you an example, it's not do a blood test on everybody, but let's say someone who has high cholesterol, diabetes, high blood pressure. They don't have heart failure. There is a marker that we do for heart failure. It's called proBNP that sometimes could be elevated in someone who don't have any symptoms of heart failure. That could be a type of a screening for patients who have some changes, some structural changes in their heart, and maybe help us and be more aggressive. But that's not the standard of care. It's not something we do. Going to the question, the hallmark of heart failure in terms of symptoms is shortness of breath, inability to walk or perform different levels of exertion. Depending on what's the patient's baseline will be the degree of limitation or how soon they find out. If someone, let's say, is able to run 5 miles per day and they are developing heart failure, they might start slowing down. And initially, they might not even notice it. They think it's just that, oh, I'm getting old, I have to slow down. But then the symptoms continue to progress, or the limitation continues to get worse over time. By the time the patient sees a doctor, they might say, I only walk 3 blocks, 4 blocks, but 2 years ago, I was able to run 5 miles. For patients who are more sedentary, maybe their baseline, they started at 3 or 4 blocks, that declines progressively, and it could be that if they wait too long to seek medical attention, they might not be able to walk from here to the door before getting short of breath. So progressive decline in exercise tolerance because of shortness of breath, that is a red flag that people should investigate. Also, swelling of the feet, sometimes people attribute that to the vascular insufficiency, and use compressive stockings, but don't try to find the reason for that. And that is a sign of heart failure, that is because of the fluid accumulation caused by the heart failure. Other symptoms that are less specific, feeling tired, fatigue, short of breath, while laying flat, having to use pillows at night more than before, that's a very typical sign of heart failure. Also waking up in the middle of the night, feeling like someone is drowning, and then they get better. When they get up, that's called paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, and that is because of fluid buildup in the lungs. That's also a typical sign of heart failure. But at that time, patients are already seeing a doctor or close to it. There is not much to do in terms of prevention when someone gets to that point.
So to prevent people getting to that point, again, talking about the years-long process we're describing here. How do you do that?
We have a classification. We classify patients in stages. It's a classification from the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association. And it goes from A to D. Those are the stages of heart failure. So the first two stages are not really heart failure in terms of symptoms. It refers to people at risk or people who have certain damages but don't have symptoms of heart failure. So stage A, it refers to patients who have certain conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Stage B is patients who have certain structural damages, like thickening of the heart muscle from longstanding high blood pressure, but don't have diabetes. So back to your question, the recommendations depend on where patients are. There are patients who are not even in that category because they don't have anything. They're completely healthy. So for those, starting with them, having a healthy lifestyle, like avoiding trans fat, processed food, eating the vegetables, fruits, keeping a healthy weight, seeing a doctor routinely to screen for certain conditions like high blood pressure, high blood sugar, the cholesterol, before they become a problem, exercising 3-5 times per week. So that's the way that we stay healthy. In a completely healthy individual. If someone is in stage A, meaning they have some chronic condition, then taking care of their condition, taking their medications, following the same recommendations in terms of weight, exercise, and eating, avoiding excessive salt intake, that applies to everyone, really, because excessive salt intake can lead to development of high blood pressure, which is one of the risk factors for developing heart failure later in life. Patients who already have structural damages, let's say someone who had a heart attack. It was a tiny one, but there is some damage in the heart muscle. That person necessarily doesn't have heart failure, but that is that puts them at a higher risk of developing heart failure in the future. So that's someone who needs to be monitored closely with their physician make sure they are on the right medication after having a heart attack. There are medications that they can prevent the remodeling of the heart and eventually the development of heart failure. In the same way, the same lifestyle, exercise, and diet changes applies to anyone in the spectrum. It's just a continuum, and depending where patients are, there might be more aggressive interventions or recommendations, but there's always room to improve the progression or the worsening of the condition.
What is the diagnostic process like for a heart failure patient at any particular stage? How invasive, how not fear-inducing might mm-hmm. this process be?
Someone who has signs and symptoms of heart failure, like swelling of their feet, a shortness of breath, those are typical signs and symptoms of heart failure. So the first thing we would do as cardiologists, even the primary doctor can order that, is get an echocardiogram, which is a sonogram of the heart. It's a non-invasive test, and that gives us a lot of information in regards to the cardiac muscle, how much the heart is pumping. We refer to that as ejection fraction. We look at the valves, if there is any leaking of the valve, if there is any tightening of the valves, we can measure the pressures inside of the heart. So that is the gold standard and the very first test that we do for heart failure. Depending on what we find on the echo or the symptoms that the patient presents with, if it's not explained by the echo and we still have a strong suspicion, there are other tests that are more invasive than sophisticated, like cardiac MRIs, cardiac catheterization. If we find heart failure and we're looking for the cause of it, we might recommend getting a coronary angiogram to look for blockages in the heart. We might do blood tests to complement the findings on the other tests or to assess the effect of the heart failure on other organs like the kidneys, the liver. It can be a very complicated and complex process, but everything starts, I would say, with an echocardiogram, which is a non-invasive way of learning a lot about the heart.
Let's talk about those other organs, like the kidneys and the liver. What does heart failure do?
Heart failure interacts very closely with the kidneys, mainly. And when someone has heart failure, there are two main problems that could happen with heart failure. One of them is congestion, meaning when someone is retaining a significant amount of fluid, and that's what causes swelling of the feet, abdominal bloating, swelling, poor appetite. In the same way that we have swelling in the feet, that can cause swelling in the abdomen, in the intestines, and in the veins that drain the blood from the kidneys. So that causes pressure to build up in the kidneys and can affect the kidney function. In patients who have the type of heart failure that causes the pumping to diminish, vital organs like the kidneys don't get enough blood flow. So that can also impair the renal or kidney function. In the same way for the liver, mostly congestion, the backflow from the heart causes the liver to get congested. We call that a congestive hepatopathy. And that can lead eventually to what we call cardiac cirrhosis, which is liver cirrhosis from heart failure. And that can happen in someone who has long-standing heart failure and the congestion hasn't been managed appropriately. The constant extra fluid in the vessel makes the liver swell and eventually damages the parenchyma, the liver tissue, and someone can develop cirrhosis from that.
Is this a late stage of
yes.
heart failure? So
yes.
this would be
yes.
someone who physically is quite burdened, and you would see signs of congestion just looking
Definitely.
At them.
Definitely, yeah. Someone who has had heart failure for a very long time.
That's cardiologist Dr. Juarez Rojas Marte. Join us next month as we continue our discussion with treatment and management options and what he's got his eye on in the research and pharmaceutical development space. It drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.